This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Disrupt with myself, Mpumi Nhlapo, powered by T-Systems South Africa. On this show, for those of you that are new, we focus on immersive disruption through in-depth conversations with industry leaders. We talk about a range of topics really centered around technology across various industries, and we have guests in studio that help us explore these journeys and these topics. In the studio with me today, I've got Willie Siama. Willie, how are you?
Okay, and you, Mpumi?
I'm great, thank you. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You are the founder of Initiate, a Pan-African digital marketing solutions company. We're going to talk about that a little bit. You are a digital strategist and infopreneur, so quite a few things that we need to define today.
Absolutely.
And some terms we need to come to grasp with. In fact, I'm told you are one of the leading Pan-African digital marketing strategists.
I'd like to believe so.
You'd like to believe so. Fantastic. And so today we'll be talking about digital marketing and the role that digital marketing platforms play in shaping public opinion, you know, in the wake of the U.S. elections, where to a certain extent those conversations about how Facebook could have influenced the outcome of those elections. We know in the BBM days in Egypt, where BBM at the time, BlackBerry, had a big influence in the uprisings there. So I think digital marketing as an influence of public opinion is really becoming quite a topical area of conversation. And I think for organizations and businesses, there's obviously an opportunity to leverage content and information differently to drive business strategy.
Absolutely.
And so we'll be talking about that today and other topics around social media, digital marketing, branding, how organizations can position themselves in a digital world. So really exploring the full spectrum of what the digital landscape has to offer. You founded Initiate in 2008, but you say that you fell into marketing by mistake. Can you talk us through that?
Funny enough, while at university, I avoided marketing.
You avoided marketing?
Don't ask me why. And when I started work, it had to do with the fact that I needed to get work because my firstborn had just been... my firstborn had just been born.
Okay.
sounds like a crazy kind of coining of a phrase. My firstborn was came to Earth in November of 92.
Okay.
I was finishing my first degree then, and in 93 I had to find work. The first job that came by was by SAB. I was an operations trainee at that stage, and operations in SAB terms was really talking to warehousing and distribution.
Okay.
That's where I started my employment journey. 21 months into it, an opportunity came up to become a trade marketing manager.
For SAB. Okay.
And this was in Northern Region, as they called it then. It's loosely put, it's in the Petersburg area.
Okay.
So I took up a role there, and I thought, I'm now in marketing that I avoided at university.
Yes.
And when I started the journey, I really enjoyed it so much that I stayed in it. So it was by sheer coincidence,
yes,
that I ended up in a marketing role, and to this day I cannot tell you why I avoided this as a career stream from a studying a point of view, but I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, destiny. Yeah. So Initiate's core mission is to assist brands to develop effective digital footprints.
Yes.
It's a multi-visual content that you try to produce, and you've been delivering your services for about 6 years now.
Actually, for over 8 years.
For over 8 years.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So let's just talk a little bit about digital marketing and strategy, digital marketing strategy development, right? Digital marketing.
I mean,
everything these days, if you put digital before it, then somehow it means it's got to do with the current world. But I think there's more to it. So how do we define digital marketing from traditional marketing?
Okay. I suppose in loose terms.
Yes.
You separate digital from traditional based on the channels that you use to communicate.
Okay.
Because with traditional, we are talking communication channels that are traditional TV, because even that has gone digital now.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask.
Exactly.
Yes.
Traditional TV, traditional radio, which has also gone digital now.
Yes.
Cliff Central is
absolutely
a digital radio, for lack of a better phrase.
Yes.
You are also talking a channel like print media.
Yes.
Okay. When digital marketing speaks to internet-driven communication channels.
Okay.
That's in the generic kind of way, splitting the two. What is at the core of it though is that with traditional marketing as we know it, it tends to be from the brand to the consumers, and there is no a conversation that's happening between the brand and the consumers that they're trying to interest.
Okay, so like, okay, for example, if I'm watching television, there's a message that's pushed to me directly and it doesn't allow me to really engage back.
In fact, I like the word that you used, push.
Yes.
Traditional marketing is about push marketing.
Okay.
Where you're pushing messages out to consumers. While digital marketing is about pull marketing, where you are hoping that when you put your messages out onto these digital platforms, consumers will pull them because they will look for you themselves. You don't have to be interrupting them.
Okay.
They will find you. That's where, in kind of technical terms, traditional marketing is different to digital marketing.
And there's a space for both.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In fact, more and more, and this is one thing that I'm really an advocate for, given that, you know, my background is traditional marketing. We're advocating for integrated marketing approach because it's not either one or the other.
Okay.
It is both. And each one of them will have to find its space because it also depends on all sorts of things, you know. Some things are broken first on digital media. And then they go to traditional media thereafter, and the other way around.
I see.
Look at how I like using the example of our perfect wedding.
Yes.
Our perfect wedding is on traditional TV as we know it.
Yes.
But when you look at where the conversations are happening, they're happening online about what is happening on TV.
Yes.
So in that kind of way, you need to have an integrated approach to marketing.
I see.
Yeah.
And then this concept of social community development,
mm-hmm,
seems to be quite a buzzword about developing communities, developing social communities. Why is that important and how do we define that?
It is important because the pool nature of marketing as we know it now, which is really spurred on by digital media.
Yes.
Demands that you have to build your own communities who hopefully are your advocates. Because if you don't have advocates as a brand, you lost in this space where there is so much clutter because everybody is trying to speak to everybody else about everything else that is of interest, hoping that those they are talking to have got a mutual interest.
Okay.
So you need to have your own communities who will fight your battles for you. We know this in you know, it has happened in so many ways. Let me take an example of the Chase Bank.
Yes.
Which is a Kenyan bank. Chase Bank is like Capitec Bank here. What happened was, you know, there was a rumor that Chase Bank was running out of money.
Yes.
And people ran to the bank to try and draw their money, and chaos broke. What happened was the Chase Bank's advocates were the ones who actually defended the brand on social media. That is when you realize the value of communities that you have online. Without that, who knows what could have happened to Chase Bank, because actually the run was caused by people on social media itself.
I see.
That is the value of online communities, because they will do the work for you when you are not there.
Okay. So let's take the two together. So there's your online communities and there's your digital marketing strategy. And
yeah,
you spoke about creating an environment where your customers are actually looking for you as opposed to you pushing a message to them.
True.
Let's talk, how do you make that happen? You know, what are the, because you know, if I look at social media and how I interact with it, it's largely just to communicate what I might be doing on a daily basis. I mean, I'm not a corporate in that sense. So if you look at it from a business, how do they go about leveraging these phenomena, if I can call them that, and translating it into something, you know, you talk about monetizing, you know, digital marketing. How do you go about doing that?
It's actually interesting you're asking that question, Bumi. Let me state two examples. The first one is, you know, we try and educate our clients and through our own blogging attempts to say, you cannot create a viral campaign.
Okay.
So let me state it again. You cannot create a viral campaign because the virality of a campaign is determined by those who are on online media generally.
Yes.
If they find it interesting to them, they will talk about it. That is how a campaign becomes viral.
Okay.
And we hear this all the time where clients are saying, but I want a viral campaign.
Yes.
It's not up to us as practitioners in the digital marketing space to create viral campaigns. Okay. Now, what is important is you have to understand the trends that are taking shape. You have to understand your community, hence the whole community management concept. You have to have a view for what tickles their fancy. And you can't always get it right.
Of course, because
you know, things happen in this space. Let's take an example. You have a situation where you launch a campaign. Okay? It is in December, and now I cannot remember the year. And Nelson Mandela passes away. Nelson Mandela becomes the news, not your campaign.
Absolutely.
So you don't have control over everything that happens in this space. And in fact, I argue that you don't have control over at all. What you have is influence. So the bigger your community is, the more enhanced your influence. So from a strategy point of view, what you want to try and do is first understand what the your brand is about. Let's take a typical government a brand like government communications.
Yes.
Okay. Government communications is more of a distributor of information than it is an engager of an engager with online communities. You have to understand that about your brand.
And they deliberately want to position themselves that way.
Deliberately so, but at times I tend to feel that they are deliberate in ways that are kind of sinister.
Okay.
Okay. Which is a topic for another debate. But whatever is the case, whatever are your reasons, but you have to understand how your brand is positioned. Okay. When you understand that, whatever strategy that you're going to come up with in terms of putting messages out and hoping that consumers will draw them, will be informed by your brand positioning. Let's take an airline as an example. Airlines, by nature, and I'd like to argue that they don't even have a choice over this one. Airlines need to engage.
Yes.
Because when you are at the airport, and for whatever reason, there's a flight delay, or you've landed at your destination and your bag is missing. You want to talk to somebody.
Yes.
And you want to do so quickly.
Yes.
And effortlessly.
Yes.
So in that case, you typically go to Twitter and say, I have a complaint. The airline who are ferrying you or who ferried you to your destination, they better be there to kind of say, this is what you can do, or how can we help you,
yes,
or we are addressing this issue. So it's not really a choice matter on their part, because if they are seen to not be engaging with their flyers who they hope to become frequent flyers, they will change airlines.
Of course.
So in understanding what your brand stands for, you need to then pick your battles. Because the other challenge with this is that there is so much in the online space that other brands run the risk of becoming everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Okay? So when you have then bedded down what your strategy is, which is in line with how your brand is positioned, and you know the category that your brand is in, you then activate on the basis of that strategy. And you hope that your online community will then engage accordingly and be able to graduate and become your advocates, because ultimately that's what we want.
Yes.
These communities to do for us, and hopefully as we do more of that and we get in the advocates, those advocates will then influence other consumers. We're talking peer-to-peer influence. And those consumers will then convert and become our customers and ultimately our advocates. And so it goes.
But how do we get them to become advocates in the first place? Or community participants?
Absolutely. Now, you have to put yourself out there. What we are hearing more and more in the online space is consumers want transparency. Put yourself out there. Be transparent and engage with them genuinely. Because if you try and hide stuff, they will find out. They okay. always do.
Yes.
And as you do more and more of that, the online community grows, because they find that you have some level of interest, and share with them stuff that's of interest. You know, the challenge that we having as digital marketers and as brands is that we always keener to push our messages, as opposed to really communicating stuff that is of value to the consumers.
Yes.
Now, what makes it even more difficult is that, as we told, there is so much of content out there right now that the online consumer is becoming very discerning in terms of which content they engage with and which content they toss out.
And also which platform they engage that content on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And now you've added a layer to this, and that layer is understanding of how you put your content across the various channels. Because you can't be saying stuff, at least in terms of tonality, you can't be saying stuff on LinkedIn in the same way that you do on Facebook, in the same way that you do on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay.
So you have to understand those dynamics. Understand the headspace of the consumers, because when I'm on Facebook, I'm connecting with friends.
Yes.
When I'm on Twitter, I'm in a different mode altogether. When I'm on LinkedIn, and so it goes. So you also have to understand that as a brand. And we fall foul of it, because we tend to want to put together a message and just put it out there and hope that, you know, it will catch fire somehow.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite happen that way. And consumers in their discernment, they do get it when you start doing that stuff. I'll give you one simple example. What tends to happen is you put stuff out on Twitter and you want to take that stuff and put it everywhere else. But Twitter is then using the at sign, which doesn't apply to Facebook, which doesn't apply to LinkedIn. And when consumers pick that up, they get irritated. Because I can't then call you, I think you call yourselves Gete?
It's Gete.
There you go.
Yes.
Now, you ask Gete with an ad sign on Twitter.
Yes.
But when I mention you on Facebook, I have to mention your full name.
Yes.
So those are some of the things that we really need to understand as marketers. And you know, it becomes murky in a sense, because we're also trying to do things quicker, cheaper, faster, and you know, the balance becomes a bit tenuous. Now, I want to speak to the second example. When Coca-Cola announced, and I think this was 5 years ago, that they are shifting from traditional marketing as it was known then,
yes,
to content marketing, I even thought, you such a big train. How are you going to turn this around? They saw something that many other brands hadn't seen at that stage. And Coca-Cola have been going in that direction fairly aggressively. And many of the brands are now learning, we should have done this way back when.
Yes.
Because if we don't do so, because content marketing, you know, we use these terms interchangeably.
Let's define it quickly. So content marketing, I mean, what does that encompass?
When you talk content marketing, you're really speaking to making sure that you are developing content that will live on the various channels, but is led by digital media.
Okay.
As opposed to traditional marketing, because traditional marketing is about outbounding. Content marketing is about inbounding. Okay, it goes back to the push-pull marketing terms that we were talking about.
I want to clarify it. So if I look at television and the roots of television.
Yeah.
It was really to provide content, which is television content, but then the basis of that, you can then have, you can market, right? You can sell a product on that platform, you know, at a very basic level. And so when you speak about content marketing, are you kind of, is it, are you leaning into that same type of reference where you're developing content and then making, creating marketing opportunities within that content, or is it different?
There is a subtle difference to some extent. Think of it this way. When you're talking content marketing in the context of digital, consumers are saying to us, don't overmarket.
Okay.
We get it. Talk to us. Connect with us. And in the process, we'll make up our minds whether we think we want to now graduate and start interacting with your brand.
Yes.
Which makes it the longer kind of approach. Because as a marketer, I kind of want to talk to you now and let you buy my product right here, right now.
Ideally, yes.
And content marketing is saying, let's build a relationship. That's where it has to start.
Okay.
And
let's get to
process,
know each other.
Exactly. And for a good number of brands, think of Red Bull. Red Bull has now effectively become an online publisher.
Yes.
More than they are a Red Bull energy drink marketer. Because they're saying, let's connect with our consumers and let them make the decision on the basis of this connection. Because the stronger the connection becomes, the more they'll be inclined to want to interact with a with the brand, which is really the event, the ultimate that we want them to do.
I see.
And that is what content marketing is really about.
And they've picked their battles quite early and very clearly in terms of the space within which they want to publish, become a publisher, you know, the audience for which they want to publish, if I can put it that way.
Absolutely. They've done an awesome job of it, I must admit.
Yeah.
And hopefully brands will start following soon, some anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's where the battleground is now.
Now, let's pull it into the B2B space, because it does create then a different type of complexity, because you're not speaking necessarily to the end customer themselves. You're kind of speaking to another corporate organization that in effect becomes your customer, although ultimately you're serving their customer. I would say then, you know, this content marketing becomes even more important into that space, or equally important at least, because then you've got very specific topics that you're speaking to. How does that translate into the B2B space?
Now, within the B2B space, it's even more important to your point, because as a business, I know what I'm looking for. And when I look for that which I'm seeking, make sure that you are out there and you position yourself from a B-seller point of view, and you position yourself as a subject matter expert insofar as what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Then I can engage with you. You know, we cannot afford a shotgun approach with a B2B scenario. And B2B in this case, we're talking business to business.
Business to business, okay? Yes, yes.
So, as a business who's looking for a service or who's looking for a product, I'm fairly aware. I do my own research, and by the time I go out looking for a person who can provide that service or that product, technically, I have ticked those boxes. So the person in this case, and I'm talking digital marketer as an example.
Yes,
you better be clear about the fact that you've positioned yourself as being the best to be able to meet the requirements of the business who's looking for digital marketing services. And you know, the space is fairly contested in that case.
Absolutely.
And you know, interestingly, within digital marketing, the barriers to entry are so low.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they can do it. Everybody thinks they can tweet.
Yeah.
and as a result, if you don't really position yourself well as a subject matter expert, you're going to be swallowed. So that's kind of where the differences are. With the B2C, you can kind of, you know, shoot in the dark somewhere and kind of hope
customers will come your way. Yes.
And even there, though, you know, because increasingly customers are becoming consumers, the ultimate consumer in this case, they are becoming much more discerning. even that space is becoming a bit of a challenge, but it's more so in the B2B space.
Okay. So let's talk then a little bit about this public opinion and how digital platforms, as we understand them, are driving public opinion. An article by J.P. Kloppers titled, "What is Really Driving Public Opinion?" And they looked at data analytics and they looked into opinion mining, as they called it, and really trying to understand how are people's decisions being driven. I want to ask the question like this. If I'm on Facebook, I assume the things that are happening there are pretty organic. Okay?
Yeah.
But what you're telling me now is that it might not be the case. There's very deliberate actions taking place to make me act in a very specific way. Okay? So there's a philosophical aspect to the question, which we'll come to, but I want to start firstly to say, to what extent are we being kind of channeled on digital platforms in terms of the content that we consume and how that shapes the next steps that we take?
Sure. Facebook is actually the master at this. You spoke briefly about the Donald Trump phenomenon.
Yes.
And you know, the fact that people are saying Facebook had a hand in the outcomes.
Yes.
One way or the other.
Yes.
You have two players. You've got the online, the platform owner in Facebook.
Yes.
And you've got the content provider.
Us.
Yeah. Now, the content provider himself or herself has got certain specific objectives. Okay? In my case, across the various social networks, I always use my professional hat on.
Okay.
Even on Facebook.
Okay.
So I have a specific objective to position myself in a professional way.
Okay.
Okay. So anyone who interacts with my content, I'm really trying to say to them, I am this kind of person who offers these sorts of services, and this is how I want you to engage with my content. Okay. So there's a level of influence.
Yes.
And then you look at Facebook, who are the owner of the platform. They have their own objectives, and ultimately their objectives are about making sure that people engage with their content in such a way that they can charge more in terms of advertising rates for the particular content.
Okay.
Here's one simple example. You get more reach on Facebook when you load your video directly on their platform versus when you embed a link from YouTube. There is manipulation there already.
And that is a fact.
They will not admit to it, but we know. Because you cannot explain why, when I put on my YouTube video, it gets less reach than when I upload a video directly on Facebook. So it is clear.
Yes.
Okay? Now, and it is an accepted a view now that Facebook does this best. More than any other social network for that matter. By feeding you the type of news that serves their purpose. I remember 5 years ago, for organic content, I used to get lots and lots of reach.
Yeah.
Now I don't. What is the explanation? They're saying, ooh, there's too much clutter of content out there, so we're trying to make sure that we feed your followers and your fans only the type of content which our analytics tells us that they are more interested in. And here's the funny part though. When you boost a post, then you get more reach.
Yeah.
So how do they explain that part? So it is clear to me that there is manipulation insofar as data is concerned.
Right or wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And at times they get it wrong. I mean, Facebook has been in trouble a few times for changing their privacy policies, amongst other things, because people were saying, whoa, 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 whoa. Now you're starting to encroach on our privacy because we come here for a specific purpose. Don't try and play games with our content and all that. So Facebook is a classic example, if you like, of what can happen when we are able to take data, crunch it, make sense of the data and start feeding people on our site only the data that serves our purpose.
And that's not new, right? So without making it about Facebook, but if I look at media in general, I mean, this term propaganda has always been there.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it was television and they push certain news, public broadcasters, depending on the regime that was, I guess, running the national broadcasters at the time, print publications, depending on who owns that publication, they can feed us. So I guess any media is open to manipulation, right or wrong.
No, it is. And here's an example from a content provider point of view. Okay. People have now figured out that you can actually open lots and lots of accounts and start publishing a content with a certain viewpoint. And the more people see that type of content, the more they are likely to start engaging and to some extent even believing what you're telling them. As a content provider, the whole debate that we're having now about white monopoly capital is one such example. It's almost accepted now that there has been manipulation of public opinion to start believing that there is this term indeed called white monopoly capital, and there is an element of truth in it. Now, what makes it even more challenging is that social netizens, as I call them, they tend to believe things at face value.
Yes.
Why do I say this? We do lots and lots of blogging on our site.
Okay.
We put stuff out there. And we realize people don't click on the links that we share for them to come to our site to read more about what we're telling them in 140 characters.
So they're happy with what you've said in 140 characters.
And that's where they leave it. My way has just suffers the ignominy of you know, fake news that was published, and people believed the fake news that, you know, there was this there was racism because, you know, one of their employees distributed an email that had racist connotations.
Yeah.
And only afterwards, after the social netizens had jumped on board and basically criticized my way for being racist and threatening this and all those sorts of things, only afterwards the truth came out.
Sure.
So you have those unfortunate situations where content providers can actually manipulate news.
Yes.
And the platform owners, they are also able to manipulate what we see and engage in, because they've got the data to be crunching to see which way trends are going, and as a result, skew what we see.
What we see, yeah.
Yeah.
So talk to me then about influencers. So there's a new breed of people that we heard the term even in the wake of the you know, the scandals around social media manipulation. So this term influencers, what role do they play?
They play a big role. You know, it's a funny one, because influencers have always been there.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, with the advent of online communications and the social media at large, we have given it a term now that has made it popular. But they've always been there, you know. Here's an interesting stat. We told that on Twitter, as an example, only 5% of the Twitter universe tend to say things all the time. 5%. The 95% are listening and retweeting, at best.
Interesting.
Okay. So when you take that I think Twitter are now sitting at 330 million. Subscribers across the world, 5% of that is about 1.5 million people. If my
15 million.
Thank
15
you.
15 million. Yeah.
So now, in the context of South Africa, that number is even smaller. Okay, I don't have the numbers.
Smaller.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we know who are the typical culprits in this, or is it culprits or the
contributors?
There you go.
Yeah.
We see their tweets all the time.
Yes.
So what it says is they have become influencers. They influence what the, you know, social conversations are taking place literally on a daily basis. Okay? And as a result, they've become so powerful in their own right. Some of them have kind of found their own niches. I was listening to Webfluential talking about how the trends are shaping out in South Africa right now. Webfluential is a platform where if you believe you're an influencer, you will register yourself there.
Okay.
Companies will come looking for you so you can distribute their content or at the least, you know, endorse them.
Okay.
Okay. We know that Kim Kardashian is one typical example of somebody who makes lots and lots of money from endorsing brands.
Yes.
Okay. So back to South Africa. Webfluential indicated that they don't have enough influencers who talk about business.
Interesting.
So to anyone who's listening out there who might have missed this,
they can give you a call.
There you go.
Yeah.
So go register yourself if you believe that you know, you are influential in the business space, because you know, companies who are trying to do a business are looking for you. So influencers have become such a big phenomenon. Thanks to the digital marketing, you know, the increase in digital marketing influence itself.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, so how do then companies, now taking it back to business, how can they start to, we now have the backdrop. So
yeah.
We understand the landscape. We understand that we need to leverage it differently depending on the platforms. We understand that it is open to manipulation, good or bad. But that there's an opportunity. I think that's the point, is that it does present a new opportunity for companies to differentiate themselves in a very competitive landscape. So can you maybe give some pointers on how companies can start to leverage digital marketing strategies to do things differently?
One of the first things is that companies themselves need to take the time to understand how the space works. Because, and I'm saying this with the utmost of respect, a lot of companies still don't.
Okay.
And I suppose it's because we take it for granted. What do I mean by it? If I am I'm a marketer within any company, and I'm involved in the social networks in my own personal capacity, I tend to think it is that easy when I'm doing business.
Yes.
So
I'm saying yes for myself.
and I think you're saying yes for a few other people out there.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, as a start, companies need to understand the space. Okay, take the time. We happy, you know, I'm not here to advertise my business as such, but we happy to share knowledge about the space for free.
Okay,
and hopefully in the process we'll do business.
Yes,
but. Understand the space. That's the first thing. The second thing that companies must really take the time to do is listen to what online consumers are saying, the social netizens, as I choose to call them. Just listen, because we are in a hurry to get our brands out there without understanding what are the trends that are taking shape globally, locally, within our category, about our competitors, and possibly about our own brands.
Mm.
Because if your brand is worth any salt out there, social netizens are talking about it. Just listen before you start communicating.
Okay.
Okay. When you've done so and you have an understanding of you know, what those trends are and how they're playing themselves out, then understand how you want to play in the space given the positioning of your brand, because you cannot be one thing on traditional media and be another on digital media. It doesn't work. Your brand should have a unified position regardless of the media channels that you are using to communicate.
Yes.
When that has happened, go and test the waters. The one thing I love about the digital marketing space is that it allows you to experiment. And you have to be brave as a brand to be able to go and experiment and see what works. And as you do so, you then build on what works. But you keep your ear on the ground all the time, because this space is, you know, it's moving, it's shifting. There's new stuff that's coming on board all the time. And yes, if you don't keep your ear on the ground insofar as those changes are concerned and how they're going to affect you, you're going to be left behind.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is just top of mind what companies must do, you know, if they want to really play effectively in this space. And obviously, work with people who have invested their time and resources in understanding the space and keeping abreast with all the changes and what have you that are taking place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then around data analytics, is it specific to online data, or is there a part of this that speaks to data within the organization, within the digital marketing space? How do the two come together?
In my mind, data is data.
Okay.
In this case, online is really just a source.
Okay.
We know that online gives you more opportunities, because as people interact, as people visit the internet, we can record that stuff. Unfortunately, you know, when you're talking to print and traditional radio as we know it, and traditional TV, it becomes a bit of a challenge to be able to collect data without aggregations.
Yes.
But when it comes to the online space, there's no aggregations. I can zoom into Mpumi who is interacting with me on an ongoing basis.
Yes.
Okay. So data is really important. It's really understanding how you know you can work with data based on the sources that it comes from. One thing to also remember, by the way, about the online data is that there are fictitious accounts out there.
Yes, okay. I was actually going to ask the question around that.
Absolutely. So you need to bear that in mind, and there are tools out there that can help you suss out you know, the data that's coming from fictitious users in this case, so that you can then, you know, stick with the data that has got more value.
Okay.
And spend that time in really crunching the data, because it will tell you stuff. It really will. I'll give you one simple example. A lot of the brands, they tend to be using their working hours when it comes to engagement.
You mean on digital, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so okay. 9 to 5, 8, whatever it might be.
You see what I mean? And some of the consumers in those categories for those brands could be active on social media after hours.
Yes.
So if you don't understand simple things like those, you are really going to get it wrong. So it's a simple example of the reason why we should understand what is happening online by just looking at the data and trying to get insights from it, which will inform what you must do better.
Yeah, I guess if your people are online after hours and you post in the morning, they might miss it, for example.
There
Simple
you go.
Thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or they are online on the weekends. I mean, the whole advent of Black Twitter. We know that Black Twitter is very live on Sunday, from afternoon going to the evening.
Yes.
So if you don't understand those sorts of things as a brand, because you don't analyze your data, then you're going to miss the mark.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's now take a bit of a broader perspective into beyond South Africa, into the rest of the continent, of our continent. What are the trends looking like there? How are things emerging more broadly on the continent?
Well, you know, South Africa started the trend generally when it comes to social media.
Okay.
But we've been left behind. The latest analysis that we did on Facebook tells us that we are being left behind.
Left behind in what sense?
Okay. Let's talk about just growth of users. Okay. And use it as an indicator of the fact that we're being left behind.
Okay.
3-4 years ago, South Africa was in the top 3 leading countries on the continent in terms of growth of Facebook active users.
Okay.
We are now we are sharing the last spot with Morocco in the top 5. Okay? Now, but let me draw your attention to this. Morocco has got 60% of our population. 60%. We're now sitting at 55 million.
Yeah.
Okay. They have 60% of our population, but we are now
neck and neck.
Neck and neck with them at 18 million users. That already tells you that we are actually losing out insofar as our impact within the social network space.
Okay.
While I haven't done the numbers lately for the other social networks, I wouldn't be surprised if the trend is common. Because Facebook has become like a Coca-Cola. You know, when you speak about fizzy drinks, you speak about Coca-Cola.
Yes.
Facebook has become that for social media. So Facebook is a very good proxy for what is happening on the social network front.
And what's leading to this? What's the cause?
Part of the reason is because our data is so expensive in this country.
I see.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I have written quite a lot about you know, our data costs. Comparing in some cases, our very own companies that are in other countries. I've done so for Nigeria. As a matter of fact, our data costs for MTN, our data costs are higher than Nigeria's. How do you explain that? And, you know, we can go into details where I give you my own layman's view of it, and I cannot explain why is it that data cost in South Africa for MTN is higher.
Hmm.
I did the same comparative for Tanzania. Vodacom is in Tanzania as well. Their data costs are cheaper than ours. How do you explain that? It defies logic for me.
Hmm.
Now, our data costs are very high as a country.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when you look at the other elements that are taking shape is that our economy is ailing, while the economies of especially North Africa are actually doing well.
Hmm.
So it means that more people can afford
to come on
to buy data.
Yes.
That is also cheaper, and those numbers are increasing. Our numbers are really increasing at what is becoming a pedestrian rate with time. So that is the one key thing, in my opinion, that is leading to us losing the spotlight insofar as the trends are concerned.
And it's going to have knock-on impacts. I mean, not necessarily from a social media point of view, but you know, with the diminishing numbers of people being connected, has knock-on effects onto the rest of the economy. You know, in terms of people having access to new opportunities or things that they could do even on a global scale.
Actually, whether we believe it or not, you are absolutely correct. You know, social media has become such a key part insofar as a growth across the board.
Yeah.
I know that people, you know, dispute this, but just look at the trends. The trends are telling you.
Yeah. I mean, well, Facebook is what, number top five most valuable organizations on the Fortune 500.
There you have it.
It speaks to really the influence, the impact that they're having on a global scale. So given that, I mean, the one metric is that we're starting to lag behind in terms of the numbers, but in terms of how social media has been, digital platforms are being leveraged in the rest of the continent to drive business growth. Are we seeing that there's an uptake? I mean, your company, the services that you offer, is it an area that's growing, or is there still a lot of education that needs to happen to get people to understand what's possible?
You see, even insofar as development in technology at large, we are also lagging behind. Okay. Look at what's happening in Kenya versus what's happening here. Technology is being put into ordinary people's hands in Kenya, and they're using it. While there is still a lot of consumption of technology that's taking place, which is something that is happening generally on the continent, but there's also an increasing level of leveraging the technologies to be able to build solutions on the back of them. We're not doing such a good job of it.
Yes.
And you know, we can argue about what is and what is not. I'll give you one simple example about what's happening in Kenya. And this is where you see the value of government understanding how they can use the technology to actually boost the economy. In Kenya, smartphones that are imported into the country, they don't have duties.
So there's no taxes that are paid on those.
And the whole idea with it is so that you can get smartphones into many hands of the Kenyans. But yeah, that is not happening.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, and you have a situation in Kenya where government is working with business and civil society to be to make sure that they can really take the technology to the next level. We have an example of iHub Nairobi, which is very well known.
iHub,
yeah. Yes. Okay. This has become a platform where government and private industry and the developers themselves come together and they talk about challenges that they that exist out there and solutions that could be developed for them. We don't have that in the country. So as long as, kind of, in my view, government hasn't really identified what it can do together with, you know, the development community in the country to be able to work together and solve problems.
Okay, so then let's take a different view. Where do we have an advantage? So
okay.
So if someone is sitting and saying, okay, so we've got challenges, which we understand, but what opportunities can I leverage to really, you know, maximize for my organization or my small business or myself in my personal capacity?
Cool. Now, the key thing, let's talk about it not so much from a developer community point of view.
Yes.
Because you know, there is a lot more that we can leverage from digital technology, as it were. I'll give you an example with my company. And one could argue that I'm already playing in this space, but this applies specifically for small businesses. The amount of time that I'm saving by making sure that I leverage technology is massive. It's massive in the sense that I work virtually almost 100%.
Okay.
So what then happens is, because I work virtually, it means that I can collaborate with my team wherever I am without the need of being in a physical space. And I'm trying to run many of my meetings in that kind of way now, where we use digital technology alone. In this city where traffic is such a challenge, it saves me massive amounts of money in time, because what I sell literally is time. So if I can travel less and do more using technology, what a pleasure, because then I can do more things. So small businesses must look into the digital technology space with more interest. It will save them time. And the more time you can save, the more you can be productive in terms of whatever services or products that that you offer. So from that kind of perspective alone, it's a massive, massive thing. And I know that, as you know, SMEs, and I generalize, SMEs haven't really leveraged the space as well as they should.
I would agree with you, you know? Yes. Yeah.
Let me give you another example. I use Google services. I run my email on Google. I use Google Cloud Services. I run all my documents on Google, so I don't use Microsoft documents anymore.
Okay.
It was really my choice.
It's a personal choice, yes.
Exactly. So I use one point of entry for running my whole business. It saves me time, because I don't have to be using different applications and all those sorts of things. And I know that, you know, people have got different preferences.
Yes.
I'm just using that as an example of how I'm able to use the most valuable resource for me, which is time, by tapping into Google services to be able to run my business at large.
So, if you know, and before we wrap, I really want to take something from this conversation. You said the space is evolving rapidly, there's new developments all the time. What are the top three trends that you see will have a major impact on organizations that are really trying to leverage digital marketing?
I've spoken to one already, Mpumi, which is an integrated approach to marketing. It's not traditional marketing versus digital marketing. It's not. It's both and.
Okay.
The circumstances will then determine which one you know, takes the lead and so on and so on. But it is an integrated approach. That's number one. Two, influencer marketing is something that we must just reckon with.
It's here to stay.
It is here to stay. But in doing so, let's really take the time to understand how we can tap into it. Because you cannot have a single influencer who's talking about this brand today and another brand tomorrow, and so it goes.
Doesn't make sense.
You know, the online consumers are not that stupid. The third one really for me is that analytics is now taking things to the next level. It's no more just data analytics. It's now predictive analytics.
Yes.
Because in doing the crunching with the data, we must keep asking ourselves, what does this tell us? You know, the one simple truth that I've learned, Bumi, is that humans are habitual in their nature.
Yes.
You know, yes. We wake up, we brush our teeth, we walk into a shower for those of us who are that lucky, we go dress up, and then we leave for work. For those of us who are lucky to work as well.
Yes.
We are very habitual. So the more we spend time on data in understanding what those trends are and patterns are, we can actually become predictive when it comes to what we must do to engage the online consumer.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And then as we do on the show, you know, we talk about disruption, and really we do understand that social media has really disrupted how opinions are formed, how perceptions are created and shaped. We've used quite a few anecdotes and examples today. How do you describe disruption for yourself?
Okay, now here's an interesting one, Mpumi. I had a lot of thoughts about the word disruption and how it applies to my business.
Mm.
You know, at times we talk about disruption as though it's this big term that's out there.
Yes.
Let me give you a simple example how I started. Now, we know that entrepreneurs or startups, if we are to use a different term, have got certain specific challenges. One of them is funding. The other one is, market access. Now, in my case, I had the same issues. The way I made sure that I could get going without the funding, without the market access, one was making sure that I blog and blog a lot so that I could get my business out there.
Yes.
The second thing that I did was making sure that I employ people on attitude, because when I started, I couldn't afford the expertise.
Yes.
Okay. So I employed on attitude. The third one, I formed lots and lots of partnerships. I live through partnerships to this day. That's how I really disrupted the market. You could argue that it's not a big way, but it's actually what got my business to where it is today. If I didn't think of alternative ways of making sure that I could start, keep my business going, and now we're starting to afford the experienced resources, which we couldn't in the beginning, but there had to be a way.
Okay.
So that's really the kind of small disruptions that we should be making. We should start small before we start thinking, how do I disrupt the industry itself?
Yes.
Before we even start to learn to walk and later run.
Okay, fantastic. And then, in a nutshell, your vision for Africa, very quickly, as a Pan-African player.
Africa is a place to be. South Africans must stop this thing of thinking that it's all in South Africa. The rest of the continent offers so many opportunities, but you just have to be prepared to get out there and learn, and not bring, you know, this arrogance of being South African and knowing it all. And this is why we have this love-hate relationship with the rest of the continent.
Okay. Thank you very much, Willis Yama, the CEO and founder of Initiate, for joining us today to talk about digital marketing strategies and how organizations can leverage the digital world from a communications perspective very differently. Thank you to T-Systems, our sponsors on this show, for making the platform possible once again. You can follow T-Systems on www.unoutsourced.co.za. My name is Mpumi Nhlapo. Thank you for joining us on Disrupt. Have a wonderful day.
This is CliffCentral.com.